injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who is going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like S&R Remodeling, Madison Computer Works, and St. Vincent de Paul. Joining us now from the Capital Times and the Nation, John Nichols. John, I think we're going to start out with the great story of Donna Brazile just opening fire on the Democratic Party and the powers that be. And maybe I shouldn't use the term opening fire this week. That's a bad choice of words. But she certainly rhetorically created quite the storm. Here's Donna Brazile on ABC this week.
Take exception to your description of the campaign right now as an antiseptic, sterile campaign inside the headquarters. A lot of people saying that is not the campaign they knew.
Well, you know what? They should take a page from Hillary's book, take a look inside. Take a look inside of what they did last year, and then they should write their own book. Hillary wrote a book, which I enjoyed reading. It was part memoir. It was a history book. I love reading her book. If they don't like my book, don't buy it. But let me just say this. I have every right as a former chair of the party. Next year, I'll celebrate almost 50 years in American politics. The Democratic Party is 170 years old.
I get that, but how do you respond? It's not just the Clinton campaign. You know, there's a lot of traffic on Twitter right now. I've gotten emails from Democrats,
I bet,
passionate Democrats, who say they feel betrayed by all this. Any regrets?
Do I regret taking on a job the second time in my life as chair of the party, cleaning up everybody's mess, taking all of the incoming, being unable to spend funds that I raised? Do I regret being on the road 100% of the time, being hacked by the Russians, being harassed, getting death threats? Do I regret any of that? George, this was worse than Hurricane Katrina in terms of the emotional toll. But do I regret standing up for what's right, helping Hillary Clinton, helping the Democratic Party? And let me just say this, as somebody who went through the hacking experience, being able to tell the truth about what happened with the Russians, the attack on our government, do I regret any of that? No, I wish I could have done more, George.
But you think this helps for the book to come out?
Well, George, this is a lesson of 2016. If I released it next year, they would say, Donna, you're impacting on 2018. If I release it the following, Donna, you're impacting. George, for those who are telling me to shut up, they told Hillary that a couple of months ago, you know what I tell them? Go to hell.
I love her.
Isn't that great?
Yes. Well, you know what the best part of it is, too? You know, there are these absolutely absurd.
Can you speak up just a little bit, John?
There are these absolutely absurd and frankly, kind of sad people who are ripping on Donna Brazile's book, right? Because they say, oh, well, you know, if you look at the fine print in Codicil 17, line number 2, it didn't really apply the way she said it did, you know, and they're trying to find something. As if somehow an interpretation of the relationship as vaguely different would change the core message that she's delivering. And that is that the Clinton people took over the Democratic Party in 2015, 2016, not in an uncommon phenomenon, by the way. That's something, you know, the Bushes were always trying to take over the Republican Party. You know, presidents and people who are likely to be nominees do that. I understand all that. That's not the criticism. But the criticism that comes through, if you read the book, and I've read substantial sections more than just the snippet that was in Politico, the criticism that comes through in the book is something that is undebatable, and that is that the Clinton people ran a horrible campaign, and they didn't listen to people that were who were trying to help them.
Imagine if the campaign directors in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and Ohio had written books.
Well, that may yet happen. But imagine, I mean, look, we knew this. I wrote a piece in February of 2016 that said Donald Trump, President Trump, it could happen. And my argument in that cover story in The Nation was that the Democrats were not paying attention to what was going on, and they frankly needed to put together a very specific kind of campaign to be viable in 2016, to make it to where they needed to be. And, you know, it was obvious throughout the entire campaign that there was a serious problem. What Donna Brazile has done, not during the campaign, right? She could have blown up during the campaign, could have, you know, put stuff out and really gone at it. No, no, she was extremely loyal to her party and to her candidate through 2016. But now what she is saying is people need to know some of this stuff. And so my final concept on this is only to say folks who are really ripping into Donna Brazile right now and are criticizing her for putting this book out and for telling details that they don't want told or offering interpretations they don't want to have out there are like folks who get mad at a doctor who tells them they have a physical problem.
And what about President Obama and his culpability in all this?
Look, Obama does not come out overly well in the book. There's a suggestion that he neglected the party.
You think?
Yeah, I mean, I saw that.
He bankrupted the party. They bankrupted the party. It was malfeasance.
Yeah, but then, remember, it kept being bankrupt in an awful lot of ways into 2016. You know what I mean? It's an ongoing problem. And I'm not trying to let Obama off the hook all the way.
Well, I just think he was treated with such kid gloves, even by Bernie in 2016, because he's personally a popular figure. But I think he did great damage to the Democratic brand. I really do.
Well, I mean, look, the one thing to take from the Clinton and Obama presidencies is that the party did not grow at a time when it had potential to grow, right? And so mistakes were made all over the place. But this gets to a deeper problem, Sly, and one that I think, it goes to the heart of the matter. And that is that political parties should not be presidentially obsessed.
That's
when
right.
They are presidentially obsessed, right, and whoever's in charge, they get to call the shots. They get to pick the chairman. They get to guide things. They have this incredibly dominant role. That's problematic. And I'll give you a good example of this. In 2016, the Republican Party was not presidentially obsessed at the RNC level.
No, they thought they were going to lose.
They were putting tremendous energy into all sorts of other races, and they were not necessarily linking up at every point with their presidential candidate. They weren't at odds with them, and certainly Priebus and those people got on board with Trump. But at some fundamental level, what they were trying to do was up and down the ballot victory. And, you know, Donna Brazile, I think people are really misreading her book. They're thinking, oh, wow, she's getting even with the Clinton people, or she's getting even with Obama, or she's doing something like that. I have read substantial portions of this book. My impression of it is, as somebody who is passionately loyal to the concept of the Democratic Party, to the Democratic Party as, you know, the alternative to the Republicans, who really wants it to succeed, and frankly wants it to succeed as a reasonably liberal, reasonably progressive party, is saying, you people need to know what's wrong. And, you know, I mean, it may have some personality elements in it, but it's got something much deeper. There's a section in the book that, I mean, it's coming out, like, right now, so people see it. There's a section in the book where she talks about having, frankly, pretty brutal arguments with the top Clinton people about who she could put into positions at the DNC to make it function in the fall of 2016. And the description is so insulting, how they treated her was so insulting, so dismissive, so arrogant. She would talk about experienced people that she was going to put into key positions vital to running a functional campaign. And she said low-level, relatively low-level Clinton campaign people would say, oh, just a second, I'll have to call Brooklyn and check on whether you can do that.
And this is a woman who has run a presidential campaign. She actually guided Al Gore to a victory in the presidency.
He won,
right. Supreme Court took it away, but...
Well, I mean, there's another thing, too. And frankly, we should always acknowledge that Hillary Clinton won in 2016 as well. But one of the things about Donna Brazile is that she also is somebody coming out of Louisiana originally, having worked all over the country, who really is an up-and-down-the-ballot person, who's got a lot of the consciousness of all the things that need to be done. And, yes, I think if she was given more leeway, she might well have responded, because she knows the people better, might well have responded to the calls for help from Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. I think that could have been a huge factor, might well have pulled the presidential across. But also, let's say that they really did X her out of the presidential, push her to the side, not treat her with respect, not take advantage of her knowledge and background. If she had at least the resources and the go-ahead to do it, she might well have saved a couple more Senate seats. Just imagine where we'd be right now if, even if Hillary Clinton didn't make it, Democrats had 51 Senate seats.
Pretty remarkable.
It'd be a pretty different world, wouldn't it?
Before we get into the Trump stuff, I want to talk about this because it is such an incredible story. Let me play this. This is from CBS.
Well, the Friday fight between two neighbors, both of them physicians and one a U.S. senator, set off an immediate round of newsroom speculation as to what the motive could possibly have been. Well, what we've learned so far is that the whole tussle may well have been about landscaping.
This is an open and active investigation.
Kentucky State Police Master Trooper Jeremy Hodges said Senator Paul's longtime neighbor, Rene Boucher, was initially charged with misdemeanor assault before Paul was medically evaluated. Paul's office later said he suffered 5 broken ribs from the attack.
If it is found that there was a serious physical injury that occurred, then the original assault charge, which was a misdemeanor, can be bumped up to the felonious charge of assault in the second degree.
The arrest warrant for Boucher said Paul suffered small cuts to the nose and mouth area and had trouble breathing. Neighbors reportedly said the two men have a long-running dispute over yard waste. Boucher admitted going onto Paul's property and tackling him while Paul was reportedly mowing his lawn.
You don't usually have one physician assaulting another physician.
I'd say that's a fair statement.
Is that the most incredible story?
Oh, no, it's the best story. I mean, just for sheer, you're kidding, right? But can I just begin with the concept that we're dealing with two adult men named Rand
Paul, and
Rene Boucher. And, you know, and it's like, I don't want to make fun of people's names. I know people come from different places and in Rand Paul's background, different political trajectories. But, you know, I mean, everything about this story is surreal.
Five broken ribs.
That sounds like a bad Rene Boucher versus Rand Paul sounds like a bad movie, right? Like some novel where the person sort of overwrote everything. And then you end up in the thing, you know, with violence, right? I mean, clear violence over yard waste. And you're sort of like, you know, my leaves blow onto my neighbor's yard and theirs blow onto ours, and somehow we've survived.
Nobody's ever sucker punched you or tackled you. Well, of course, you probably you cut the lawn about as often as I do.
Yeah. It's like when the haying season comes. But as a good rural Wisconsinite, I don't want to waste that growth spurt at the end. But no, I mean, look, here's the bottom line. My biggest challenge with my neighbors is they're very, very efficient, very responsible people, and they mow their lawn a lot, and then I feel guilted into having to mow my lawn. But I do it with a push mower, right? I do not have a riding lawnmower. And here's the thing that
you also don't live in a gated community.
No, I do not. But here's the thing I want to point out. Number one, I kind of like Rand Paul because he wants to end illegal and undeclared wars. So he gets a point from me.
And the war on drugs. He wants to end the war on
drugs.
Yeah, it's good for him.
So much of reasons why, you know, I kind of disagree on domestic policy. There's a lot of things I sympathize with the guy. But beyond that, even if I really disagree, even if he was Ron Johnson or somebody who's just, you know, generally useless as a senator, I'm still on the side of the guy on the riding mower, okay? If you're on the riding mower in your yard mowing your lawn and somebody comes and tackles you, that's scary. I mean, doesn't that seem, I mean, I'm sorry, Rene Boucher, you get no pass from me on this one, because that's, what if it was like, I don't know, like when someone had autopilot on, I don't even know enough about driving lawnmowers, but you push Rand Paul off and the thing keeps going.
It's pretty incredible. I love the original theories is that Rene Boucher was a socialist. And I thought, how many socialists live in gated communities in Bowling Green, Kentucky?
Yeah, I assume it was the name again. The name is the problem there. They probably thought he was French or whatever. But, you know, look, here's the final problem on this thing. I'm on Rand Paul's side, 100% supporter of the guy on this one. Not on politics, but on this incident, I'm really sympathetic to him. By the same token, have you recognized that a lot of weird stuff happens to Rand Paul? You know, it's just like you look back on his history. It's like it's just weird stuff around that guy.
He is something. All right, stand by. We'll talk more. SliceOffice.com brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
We're back at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Great local sponsors like the Axley Law Firm are also one of the great reasons we're able to get these podcasts out to you. Let me tell you a little story. About maybe 23, 24 years ago, I had some listeners come to me, and I at the time sort of had a garden variety position on guns. I wasn't very pro-gun, and they convinced me that to be consistent with my ideology, that I should become more pro-Second Amendment. And from then on, I've thought a lot about it. I supported the Brady Bill, still would today.
Yeah.
I support reasonable gun legislation, but I have to tell you, Donald Trump's reaction after this most recent shooting in Texas is one of the worst things I've ever heard in my life. Here it is.
I think that mental health is your problem here. This was a very, based on preliminary reports, very deranged individual, a lot of problems over a long period of time. We have a lot of mental health problems in our country, as do other countries. But this isn't a guns situation. I mean, we could go into it, but it's a little bit soon to go into it. But fortunately, somebody else had a gun that was shooting in the opposite direction. Otherwise, it would have been as bad as it was. It would have been much worse. But this is a mental health problem at the highest level. It's a very, very sad event. These are great people and a very, very sad event. But that's the way I view it.
That's the way he views it.
Sound a little tired there, didn't he?
He did sound a little tired. He also sounded incoherent. And was he aware that he undid an Obama administration executive order that kept guns out of the hands of people that were on Social Security disability because of mental health problems?
There's a lot of, I mean, we go into a lengthy discussion here of some of the criticism that Congressman Kennedy from Massachusetts has been leveling at the administration, you know, since the Las Vegas shootings, where, you know, what he said is, you know, you do need to understand that this constant assault on the Affordable Care Act and on Medicaid, which is an obsession of not just Donald Trump, but of Paul Ryan and these other people, they keep coming back trying to do these massive cuts to, you know, again, Affordable Care Act, Medicaid. He says, you realize that's the heart and soul of mental health care in America. You are assaulting
right.
really necessary programs. So it isn't just the orders on guns. It's the broader availability of mental health care that is, A, easily accessible, B, affordable, and those are essential things. And Congressman Kennedy's just been raging about this because it wasn't Trump first, it was Paul Ryan, who after the Las Vegas shootings, you know, recognizing that just answering and saying, oh, hopes and prayers, people start to see through that hopes and prayers, the line hopes and prayers is a cover for not doing anything. So now the Republicans have decided they want to do something, and that is they want to talk about mental health and say it's not guns, it's mental health. Well, I really invite people to read Congressman Kennedy's critiques, because what he's saying is what they're doing and the way that they are doing it on these health care issues is an important part of the problem and the crisis. Now, the one thing I will sympathize with Donald Trump on is that his line that there's a mental health problem at the highest level. He did say that. I'm not even sure where that came from, but it just sort of popped into the conversation. But it seemed to be, you know, apropos. Yeah.
In this story, again, much like the Dylann Roof story out of South Carolina, there was really a flaw in the background check system that let somebody who clearly shouldn't have gotten a gun.
And it was not a flaw. I think you're talking a failure.
Failure. All
like,
right.
That people really, some folks really screwed up, it appears, because the guy in Texas had a long history. He had been incarcerated because of violence. I mean, it was clearly, this is a guy who should have been flagged. And so it speaks to a couple of things. One, it speaks to, the challenges, the inefficiency of how we deal with people once they finish incarceration, but obviously still have mental health issues and other issues. Big problem there. But B, also, that we have some gun rules, some gun controls, but they're clearly not well applied. They're not, fully followed. Some of my Republican friends will say, that we don't need new laws. We just need to apply the laws on the books and make sure that they're respected. I think that's true. I think they're right. This is clearly a case where people screwed up. Maybe the laws on the books were too weak. Maybe they were inappropriate. Maybe you really need to start talking about different kinds of weapons and what they can do. But at some fundamental level, it's true. This guy shouldn't have had this gun.
The dignity of the people in that small town, pretty incredible. And how about the young guy who's sort of a hip cowboy?
He's great, man. He was something. Is he calm about
calm,
it.
Calm, not braggadocious. Yeah. Not a lot of vitriol. He just knew he needed to stop this guy, and that was the right thing to do by instinct. And yesterday when I saw, 4% of this community was killed in this incident. Right?
Unbelievable.
So yesterday they show a woman who decided not to go to church that day. She pointed over to her neighbor's house, the pets, the dogs waiting for their owners to come home that aren't going to come home.
It's so agonizing.
I will tell you, I have never called for banning these quote unquote assault rifles, but I will say this. I think when it comes to weapons like this, there's got to be a much higher standard and more background checks and maybe a little bit of time before somebody purchases one, because they're not necessary for self-protection. And I know people enjoy using them at gun ranges, and there are so many of them out there, you could never recall them all or confiscate them. But no. I do think there should be a higher standard, because the potential to damage is great.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you have in Texas, in this terrible Texas incident, a lot of the different validations for different people who are on different sides of the gun control debate. You know, the guy went in and massacred people horribly, and frankly I think it's a little dubious about the argument that it would have been a whole lot worse after. Seems pretty awful right here, right? The baseline thing is pretty awful. By the same token, there are clearly a couple of courageous young men in that town who apparently one of them was barefoot, came running out to try and stop this guy, and the guy who was barefoot was well armed and had a, I don't know if it's the same weapon, but a similar weapon. and was quite successful in slowing this guy down, taking him down, ultimately, it looks like. And so, you know, this gets to the deeper thing that Michael Moore tried to deal with, and I think he actually dealt with very well in his movie Bowling with Columbine. What Moore was trying to say there is that a lot of rural areas have a lot of guns, and Canada has a lot of guns, just like the U.S., and yet, for some reason, they don't have what we have, which is this steady stream of massacres. And, you know, one of the things that Moore came back to in his movie now, you know, long, it seems like a long time ago, was that Canada had a national health care program and a lot of access to physical and mental health care. And also that it did have some reasonable controls. It had this sort of, you know, a mix of approaches that seemed to be working. Similarly, Australia, which has gone to some significant gun control, but also has a national health care plan, some very good mental health programs, stuff like that. You know, I'm willing to accept that the answer is a combination of responses. But what I'm not willing to accept is the people who seem to simply have a spin. You know, Trump is a classic example. You know, they sort of try to say something the day after, a couple days after, and then walk away and do nothing.
Yeah, it's not.
Because remember, nothing comes of this discussion of mental health. Is Trump going to come back to the U.S. next week with a massive funding program for it?
Speaking of Donald Trump's mental health, we got to wrap this up, but I want to play one more clip for you. This is Cheryl Atkinson, I don't know, whatever network that she was on, interviewing him. I've never heard the president as cornered, not by her, of course, she's throwing softballs, but listen to him here.
Do you think you would ever consider trying to have Mueller removed, or have you pledged to just stay out of that?
Well, I hope he's treating everything fairly, and if he is, I'm going to be very happy, because when you talk about innocent, I am truly not involved in any form of collusion with Russia, believe me.
Whenever he says, believe me.
Yeah, you know, go back to the words right before, underline them, because they are going to be proven false.
He said, I am true. He was about to say, I'm truly innocent. And then he backed up and said,
yeah, not involved.
Yeah, right. That is a bad answer.
That is a guy who's been through a lot of legal procedures, stopping himself and thinking, trying to think quickly of the right words to use. It's the bottom line. And, you know, I mean, just to note that this thing just got a whole lot closer to him literally in the last few days, not because of what Mueller's doing. This is the fascinating thing. Nobody is putting Wilbur Ross, Secretary of Commerce, into the Mueller circle right now. They're talking about, you know, Kushner and Flynn and Manafort and all these people. We've just had revelations that Wilbur Ross, the Secretary of Commerce, the guy who bailed Donald Trump out when Donald Trump ran his businesses into the ground, as the failed businessman that he is, had business arrangements with companies involving Putin's kid, or at least the spouse of Putin's kid. You understand, this thing is so sweeping within the administration, and it's not just Trump, it's the people around him. By any measure, he's involved. You know, it's not a debatable point that he's involved. It's also, there can't be a suggestion that he's innocent. There are real questions open in fairness to the guy about what that level of involvement is, what it meant, what came as a result of it. But the suggestion that, you know, that somehow there was a parallel campaign going on, that Sessions and Carter Page and all these other people were doing stuff he didn't know about, no. They're all sitting there at the table with you. And Donald Trump is an obsessive communicator, constantly on the phone, constantly on social media. I mean, it's comic to suggest what he suggests, and I think you're right. He's, in a way, right now, he's kind of a remarkable figure because he's still managing, he's still walking around, he's still doing stuff. When it's so obvious, especially with Wilbur Ross thing just coming out, that this is closing in on him in an awful lot of ways.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SlysOffice.com. Brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.